That change will come with different priorities, a new group of priorities that will be demonstrated in our ambitions, in our attitudes, our affections, and even our actions. I don't know about you, but when I first got saved, the first time I used the Lord's name in vain, it was almost like somebody hit me right in the heart. Anybody relate to that? Before, it never bothered me. But when I got saved, all of a sudden something bothered me. It's that change that happens. All of a sudden, things seem different. PD shared a phrase with us that says, God has to do something in you before he can what? Before he can do something through you. So what he does in you is that salvation, and then the change he can work through you and I. So today, we're going to look at a family, how a family works. We're going to look at that. He also mentioned something about do you guys remember the difference maker declaration he tried to get us to say with him? Well, we're going to try that again at the end today. So we're going to look at that a little bit later. But we're going to look at how you and I can make a difference in our family this morning. So I think we have to ask ourselves a question. What is the purpose of a family? Have you ever asked yourself that question? Why do we have families? What's our purpose? See, we know artists by their important creations. So if I say Michelangelo, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? The painting on the Sistine Chapel, right? How about Beethoven? The Fifth Symphony? How about if I say George Lucas? Star Wars saga, right? We think of the Star Wars saga. See, each masterpiece reveals something about his creator. The same is true with God, especially when we look at the design and the purpose that he has for a family. We catch a glimpse of the artist when we read the first two chapters in the book of Genesis, because he spoke galaxies into existence. It's crazy to think about that he literally formed mountains out of nothing. He filled the oceans, and he planted a vast array of forests with beautiful colors and variety. Think of the colors we're starting to see right now in fall. Then we get to see the playful side of God when he makes the creatures, right? I mean, we look at a hummingbird. How amazing is a hummingbird, you know? But then we look at that hummingbird and compare it to an ostrich or a skunk even, you know? So God has a great, great sense of humor when it comes to those kind of things. But the masterpiece that reveals more about God than anything else shows up when he creates something called the family in Genesis chapter 1. And there's two essential elements to a family. It's, first of all, marriage, and then parenthood. And both of these reveal God's character like nothing else in all of creation. The love between a husband and a wife provides a glimpse of Christ's love for you and I as his bride, as his church. And then the ups and downs of parenthood is a compelling picture of God's tenderness and patience towards you and I as his kids. Boy, he's got to be the most tender parent around when he looks at the stupid stuff we do. Amen? I mean, we criticize our kids. Man, what is he thinking about you and I? Because we do some pretty dumb things. But a family does more than just reflect God's character. It provides a safe place for our children to be able to experience God's love, hopefully through you and I, but also learn how to love each other in our families. Even Christ himself was born into a family because it said God in flesh literally submitted to an earthly mother and father. And he did that so he could show you and I an example of what kids are supposed to do and how they grow up, honoring their parents. That was for our benefit. That's for our benefit. It was within this nurturing care that his earthly family, when Jesus was growing up in his earthly family, that Luke 2:52 said, Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. So the understanding of the family in our current culture is increasingly becoming more and more different than what the Bible gives for definitions of families. Completely different. Not only do you and I need to continue to live up to the definition of a family that God provides in his word, but we also should be conducting our families the way Scripture instructs us to conduct our families. To me, it just makes logical sense that we glean from the wisdom that God gives us in the pages of the Bible. Amen? He's the master planner of how the family is supposed to work. Getting home right will be the hardest job you guys will ever make. It's going to be the hardest job we do as parents. Would you agree if you're a parent? Getting home right's a tough job, especially in this society today. 1 John 4:19 says this, we love because he what? Because he first loved us. We love because he first loved us. So at your tables, I'm going to give you a few minutes to answer a couple of questions. The first one being, how you being part of a family, how does that help you understand God's love for you as being in a family? How does that help you understand God's love for you? And then the second question is, how does it help you to learn to love others? So take a few minutes and talk about that. So hopefully you're able to get some good conversation going there. But what we have to think about when it comes to the family is families are the building blocks of civilization. They really are. They greatly shape and serve our society. And strong families make strong communities. Yet when the family starts to break down, does it affect our society? Absolutely it does. The Wall Street Journal recently reported on a poll that they conducted with the University of Chicago's highly respected National Opinion Research Center, and they showed some very disturbing news on Americans' shifting views on several different subjects, like faith, family, values, patriotism, and even community involvement. The respect and admiration that Americans have for these areas dropped dramatically over the past two decades. The only value that actually increased, if you can believe this, and I think we probably can, and it's unfortunate, it's America's love for money. That's the only thing that increased. And I'm not saying money's evil, because Jesus preached on money a lot. But it can tempt you and I to believe in a security other than God. True? We can be more secure with our own money, and we don't really depend on Him as much. And that money actually can become an adequate substitute for God if we're not careful. Vast social changes took place in America in the 1890s. Charles Darwin's theories of evolution started flooding the colleges. Sigmund Freud's concepts of sexual, whatever he was calling it, his human sexuality, was really starting to change America. The women's movement was gaining a voice and some great momentum. And then attitudes about homosexuality was also changing. Historian James Lincoln Collier writes this. He said, America was more than simply an idea, so powerful that it inflamed the imaginations of men and women around the world and led them to topple emperors and kings. The world no longer admires the United States. It envies our prosperity and our freedoms, but it does not admire us. Yes, immigrants continue to flood into our country, but that is mainly for the abundance of things that we have. They do not come because of an idea, and Lady Liberty weeps at what we've done with her gift. See, several events shaped our culture in 1972 for the next generation. Anybody grew up in the 70s, early 70s? A few of us? Maybe you remember some of the things that shaped our generation, like Vietnam, like Nixon going to China, or the Paris Peace Accord talks, or Watergate. Remember Watergate, the big scandal there in the government. And then something like, let's see, the adult bookstores and their X-rated garbage started to go into mainstream America, rural America. I remember growing up in Hastings, we had a drive-in theater, and they used to play Walt Disney movies and everything, right? Well, in my high school years, they sold it. It became known as Dirty Floyd's. It was a XXX movie place in Hastings, which is really crazy back in the early 70s. But those are the kind of things that started happening. We had stay-at-home moms are now entering the workforce. Sex education started infiltrating the public school systems. Marriage and family was changing drastically. Unmarried couples were living together in rising numbers, and divorce was starting to skyrocket, even gaining social acceptance, where people were saying, you know what, divorce is good for your kids. It's better that you divorce than stay together and fight for 20 years. So some people even say it was very acceptable. When we look at the prophet of Hosea, he gives some really daunting figures and kind of scary when he writes in Hosea some of the things that was happened in Israel. Listen to this. He lived in the midst of a religious society that had lost their moral compass. Less than 300 years after the reign of King David, who was a man after whose heart? A man after God's own heart. The nation of Israel was adrift. They were wallowing in an ocean of moral and cultural chaos. Hosea's description of Israel in 710 BC is a haunting picture of America as we enter the next century. Think of the impact that our culture has on our lives and our family. Because some of us don't think there's much of an impact, but if we really are honest with ourselves, there's a huge impact. In 1952, what do you think was the highest rated TV show in 1952? Any guesses? What is it? Leave It to Beaver's a great guess, not the right one. Anybody else? What? That's a good one too, but that's not the right one. You know what the highest rated TV show in 1952 was? I Love Lucy. I love, Married, Do I Love Lucy? I love watching those reruns. But I Love Lucy had 10.6 million households turning in weekly for the antics so that they could witness the antics of Ricky and Lucy Ricardo. Remember how crazy they were? Fred and Ethel Mertz and all of them? People were just loving that show. But in December of that year, guess what? CBS was faced with a dilemma. Do you know what the dilemma was? Lucy became pregnant in real life. Now, why would that be a dilemma for television, right? Lucy was pregnant, and neither the network nor the chief sponsor, Philip Morris, liked the idea of a pregnant woman on television. They thought that was a terrible thing to have a pregnant woman on television. So they made the decision to go on with a pregnant Lucy. But the writers were instructed not to use the word pregnancy. Can you believe that? Not to use the word pregnancy, which was thought to be too shocking for the American culture. Boy, have we come a long way, right? So to protect the culture and cultural integrity of the show, do you know what CBS did? They hired a priest, a minister, and a rabbi. And you would go, why would they do that? They did that so that these guys could basically review all the pregnancy scripts to make sure that they were appropriate for TV. Wow. Wow, that's pretty crazy to think about. Can you think of anything less offensive than using the word pregnancy on TV? I can't think of anything less offensive than that. Yet, 70 years ago, that was considered offensive. It really was. Now think about our TV and movies today. How they have slowly eroded our standards. True? Our standards of decency. When you think about it, I mean, right now we're bombarded with four-letter words. Would you agree? Mary and I will try to watch a movie on Netflix, and you'll find a good one that's PG-13, and it's got a great storyline, and then I'll get on, what is that called, Judd? IMDb? So you get on there, and it has TV ratings and reviews, right? So I always click on the parental button there, and it brings up language and violence and all that stuff. Even with PG-13 now, you're getting partial nudity. And they have terrible language, and Mary and I will look at a movie and say, that looks good. Check out the language. They use the F word 95 times. And I'm thinking, why do you even have to use the F word one time in a movie? And so you think about the language in movies today and how terrible that's gotten. And it's not only just the language, it's the extramarital affairs. It's the sex. You know, it's the violence. It's the nudity, graphic violence at times. Yet we choose to expose ourselves to these new and startling images every day. We choose to do that. And our response a lot of times is the same. I don't know about you, but the first time I saw nudity or heard the Lord's name in vain used or the F word on a movie, what's the first thing that happens to you? I was shocked, wasn't it? You know? It shocks you. But then the next time it happens, a little less shock. True? And then we say to ourselves, I think we try to convince ourselves and say, well, you know what? Guys at work use the Lord's name in vain. They swear all the time. People have sex. Even unmarried people have sex, and people are naked. So what's the big deal? It's life, right? It's just portraying real life. But there is a problem with that when we think about it. Because that shock becomes now acceptance. You and I will accept everything that's coming. And it gets to the point where we actually become indifferent. We don't have any concern about it at all. It's just everyday life. I know I've lowered my standards when it comes to movies, and shame on me, because I have to be a little bit more knowledgeable about what I will allow coming in, because the old phrase is what? Garbage in, garbage out. And we have to be careful with what we bring into our lives, because we have become desensitized. And we would tolerate indecencies that the previous generation would have a heart attack over now. The previous believers would just go, oh my goodness, what are you guys watching? Our moral edge has become dull. And our kids sit right next to us on the couch, soaking up the opinions and the values and the images of a godless society. And our silence is actually lethal to them, if you think about it. It's lethal to them. And then you and I as a parent will have the audacity to criticize what they watch when they choose to watch something that's inappropriate. Why would they not do it if they follow what we do? Hosea's judgment is timeless in its application, because the last part of Hosea 4:14 says this, the people without understanding is ruined. Are we heading in that direction right now? What's a family to do? I mean, if you're raising kids today, you've got it a lot tougher than I ever did. And I need to pray more for these young families, because it's tough raising a family today in all the stuff that's coming at you. What should we do? You and I have to decide that we're going to step into the light. We're talking about light in the last couple of weeks. We've got to step into the light. And we may have to answer some tough questions as we step into the light. Questions like, is a just society possible without absolute values? Without absolute truths? Is it possible to do that without God? When does life begin? Conception? You name the weeks, or birth? We have to figure this out. We know what the Word says, but we seem to want to go in the wrong direction. And then we have to decide, what is a family? How are we going to define a family today? Because there's two basic lies that floods our politically correct culture in the aspect of a family. There's two big lies, really. The first one is this: all families are equal. Do you believe that? No. William Gardner said this: the natural family composed of a father, mother, and children is the most universal fact of our existence. Every other arrangement, whether it be a single parent with kids, homosexual couples, monogamous live-in relationships, blended families, or grandparents raising their grandchildren, remains something less than a family, something less than a natural family. Now, I'm not trying to hurt or offend anybody by telling you this morning. I'm not trying to do that. But the family is where culture is going to be won or lost. That's where the line is going to be drawn. And every family that masquerades as a natural family, kids are being shattered and they're being scarred for life in those areas. And I'm not too naive to believe that this does not happen in a natural family, because it does happen in our natural families. But I'm here to tell you, all families are not equal. They're not. The hard truth is this: God's design for the family, one man, one woman coming together for life and raising their kids in the Lord, no one's been able to improve on what God's design is. So it must be a good design. The second lie is this: children are quick to recover from a divorce and other family crises. Any divorced kids in here today? If you ask a divorced kid today, has it been easy for them to recover? I'm going to tell you, 99 and 100 of them are going to say no. It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. Some people say kids are like rubber. They just bounce back. No, kids are like eggs. They crack. They're like fine china. They break. Kids are not resilient. They're not. Their wounds of parental desertion and rejection and divorce can linger for a lifetime. It really can. Anyone who's ever tried to roll a snowball knows that the center has to be what? It's got to be solid. If there's cracks or any kind of flaws in that center, it don't matter how many layers of snow you put on it, eventually, what's going to happen? It's going to come apart. It's not going to hold up. That's what childhood is like. Childhood is the core. And that core must also start out solidly. Because what's going to happen as you and I grow up, we start layering experiences. Would you agree? Year after year, we layer experiences. And those experiences don't get covered up. And they're wounded. And you're damaged. And eventually what's going to happen is those flaws will come to the surface. And 90% of the time, it's at the most inopportune time. But a lot of times in adulthood, they'll come to the surface. The wounds of divorced kids can last a lifetime. Ask any kid that's been through it. Studies over the past 40 years prove that children are deeply affected by their family structure. The blueprints are being drawn up right now for the next generation. The foundations are being laid and the walls are being built. And your family and my family are the few links to the future. They really are. And when we're gone, all that's going to remain is our efforts is going to be our kids. That's all that's going to remain. And we have to ask ourselves, how are we doing? How are we doing in this area? The American family is declining. And I had to ask myself, and the answer is yes, am I contributing to it? So as mom and dads, we have to find out, are we contributing to this problem and how we are raising our children? There was a Pew Research study that was done in 2015, so this is like 8 years ago. It's the only one I could find by them that was updated, so that's might not be totally accurate, but this is what they said. Family life is changing. Two-parent households are on the decline in the U.S. as divorce, remarriage, and cohabitation are on the rise. Families are now smaller, both due to both single-parent households and the drop in fertility. Not only are Americans having fewer children, but the circumstances surrounding parenthood has changed. Have you noticed since COVID how many people are really thinking twice about starting a family? They think about the environment and all the stuff that's going on. I personally would think, geez, I don't know if I want to raise a child in this culture today either. But what I have noticed is a lot of younger families, they're not having children right now, but have you noticed what they do have? A lot of pets. I think pets are replacing children, and that's a sad reality. They have a lot more pets right now. While in 1960, babies were born in a marriage, within a marriage, today 4 in 10 births occur to women who are either single or living with a non-marital partner. Not only has the family structure changed, so has the roles of mothers in the home and in the workplace, because more moms are now entering the workplace, and some moms are even becoming breadwinners, and some primary breadwinners. In 1960, any 1960 children here that lived in the 60s? There's a few of us still here. We've got a pretty young church. In 1960, 73% of all children living in a family lived with two married parents in their first marriage. 73%. I was one of them. By 1980, it was down to 61% living in that type of family. And today, guess what? It's less than 40%. Less than 40%. 31% of children younger than 6 have experienced some type of major change in their family structure, whether it's divorce, remarriage, cohabitation, death in some cases. 1965, I was 10 years old when my parents divorced. I was the only kid in my class that I can recall at this moment that was from a divorced family in 1965. We moved from Nashville, which was at that time a Class C school, to Hastings, which was a Class A school, and I'm here to tell you I struggled for the better part of 2 years to catch up to what they were doing compared to what I was not learning at this other school. And I struggled. And I got to believe it's affected me in my lifetime. I'm not going to blame my parents' divorce because I really feel like I had a good upbringing even in spite of that. But in 1965, when I was 10 years old, I went through it, and it wasn't a fun thing. 26% of kids that are under the age of 18 live with a single parent. That was only 9% in 1960, but it was 22% in 2000. The family has always been a stabilizing force in society. True? Always has been. The more stable the family, the more stable the nation. And Satan knows that. He knows that if he can tear down the family, he can bring a nation to their knees. And he's on his way to doing that. The number of births have declined in the United States for 6 straight years now. 6 straight years. It dropped another 4% in 2019. They have this phrase that they call replacement of the population. Anybody ever heard that before? Replacement of the population? The total fertility rate in 2020, which estimates the number of births that a hypothetical group of 1,000 women would have in their lifetimes just to maintain our current population, which is replacement, the number that we have just to accomplish that is 2,100 births per 1,000 women. We have to have at least that many. Guess what the number was last year? 1,637.5 births per 1,000 women, which is a record low for the United States. The current fertility rate is 1.6 children per woman. That's down from the 2.1 that we have just to be able to maintain our society today. Pretty crazy to think how less and less. I mean, have you noticed that, Brian? Less and less children? You know, it's like it's crazy that we have less and less babies being born today. In 1990, there were 31 million Americans that were 65 years or older in 1990. The statistics now say that in 2030, which is what, less than 7 years from now? In 2030, that number is going to double to 65.5 million people 65 years or older. Welcome to the baby boomers, right? There's going to be, think about this, an America with more elderly people than children. That's hard to imagine. Daycare centers and schools will be turned into nursing homes probably because there won't be enough kids going to school. And no other generation like this next generation, my generation, is going to have to deal with things like euthanasia and quality of life. That's what we're going to have to start dealing with. It has to start with you and I. If you and I are going to make a difference in our families, we have to make a change. We can't blame it on our government. We can't blame it on the pastor or other church leaders or anybody else. We as parents have to be the ones that stand up and say, I'm going to put a stop to this, and I'm going to make a difference. I'm going to be that one that makes a difference. I feel like we have to start evaluating our commitment to who? To God. Because we commit to so many other things in this life, but how's our commitment to Him? Now, I'm not hollering at you. I'm hollering at myself too, okay? So there's three groups of churchgoers. I found the study of three different groups of churchgoers. See which one you may fall into. The first one was called the practicing Christian. Would you guys consider yourself practicing Christians? Yes or no? Okay, so you're a practicing Christian. That group numbers 63.5 million people, and they consider that their faith is very important, okay? Now think about this. This group of practicing Christians attend church a minimum of once a month and say their faith is very important to them. Wow. If that's what we are, if that's how we're committed as a church today, you and I have got a lot of work to do, don't we? Now, I believe Grace Community Church is a whole lot better than that. We have a lot of people that show up here every week. We've got people that are committed to a home group and committed to building strong relationships and wanting to get involved and serve. So I think we do a better job than the average church does. The next group is called the churched adults. That group is twice as many. It's 124.4 million people in that group. Here's what a churched adult does. They come to church at least once every 6 months. That's a churched adult. They have a very passionate heading, a title for them. They're called the CEOs. Do you know what that means? Christmas and Easter only. They're the CEOs. My family used to do that when I was growing up. We weren't Christians. We went on Easter and Christmas. That just seemed to be what it was. And then the last group is called the church hoppers. believe it or not, that's becoming more of the norm right now. 27% of practicing Christians, that first group, hop churches. And there's a lot of different reasons they do it. Part of it is they don't like the speaker. Part of it is they don't like the music. They don't like sitting around a round table and talking to somebody. Or they might be mad at you or me or whatever. There's so many different reasons why they hop churches. But the new trend now is these, what do they call them, multi-site churches, where you can go to one church and the pastor is here speaking live. You can go to another church and he'll be up on a video screen. Or if you're running late, you can go to the closest one just because you don't want to be late to church. That's the new trend of church hoppers. So as parents, we're setting a terrible example for our kids. And if this is the case, our kids are in bigger trouble than we are. Barna reports that less than 1% of the young adult population in the United States has a biblical worldview. Do you know what a biblical worldview is? I knew a couple of things on here, but I went to Got Questions. By the way, that's a great app to have for anybody, and especially families, is Got Questions. So I went to Got Questions. This is what a biblical worldview is. There's six or seven points. Absolute moral truth exists. That's a biblical worldview. The Bible is completely inerrant, means it's truthful from cover to cover. Satan is a real being. He's not a myth. A person cannot earn their way to heaven by good works. Jesus Christ lived a sinless life on this earth, and God is the supreme creator of the heavens and the earth, and he is over the whole universe today. That's what a biblical worldview is. Statistics show that kids on average spend 30 hours a week at school, where more than likely they're being taught opposed ideas to biblical values. Now, if they're in sports, they're going to be there another 10 to 15 hours because of practice. So they're in school 30 to 45 hours, depending on if they play sports or not. Then they come home for another 30 hours where they could be watching TV, they could be playing video games, being on social media, or whatever else they do on their phones for another 30 hours. Now contrast that with the 45 minutes if they come to church once a week. Contrast that. When you look at the exposure of worldly influences versus Bible training, it's understandable that our young people are leaving home without a Christian worldview. And many of them are falling away from their faith. So I think what you and I have to do is we have to prioritize some things in our lives. We have to decide if church is going to be a top priority over everything else that's out there that wants to work its way into our families, whether it's sports, dance, whatever your kids are involved in. We have to decide what is more important, all of that or God. It's a tough decision to have to make. Think about this. If your child attended school once a month, what would that do to your kid? They wouldn't have good grades. More than likely, they would not graduate from high school. True? They would not. The comparison can also be made to the kids that attend church. If they're missing 50 to 75% of any type of biblical training here, they're going to have a shallow faith, and when their faith is tested, they're not going to stand the test. It's just that simple. I love what Pastor Josh said 2 or 3 weeks ago when he preached. He said, you know, I'm going to talk to my girls about school and sports, but the most important thing I'm going to talk to my kids about is what? The gospel, the good news in Jesus Christ. That should be the most important thing. A key factor in keeping our kids from falling from their faith is yours and my influence as parents. We can't, like I said, we can't blame anybody else. Our kids are watching us more than anybody else. We are the biggest influencers in their lives. Proverbs 22:6, who knows what that verse says? Train up a child in the way that he goes, and when he is old, he will not what? Depart from it. He, she, okay? Either one. They will not depart from it. Frank Turek, a Christian author, said this, what we win them with, we win them too. If we win them with entertainment and low commitment, we will win them to entertainment and low commitment. Charles Spurgeon was way ahead of his time when he said this. He begged the church to start feeding the sheep and don't amuse the goats. That's what he said. Makes really good sense. So we're going to look at a couple of passages today. So if you want to turn your Bibles to Ephesians chapter 6, and then two books over to Colossians 3, I'm going to read both of these passages to you, and they kind of parallel each other, but then we're going to kind of connect more with Colossians. So Ephesians chapter 6, I'm going to read the first four verses to you. It says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for what? For this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment, with a what? With a promise." Now that promise is twofold. The first part of that promise is so that it will go well with you, and the second part is so that you will what? Have a long life on the earth. You know, when your mom or dad says, "I brought you into this world, I can take you out," that's what that means. You can have a longer life if you behave yourself. Ooh, excuse me. "Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the what? The training and instruction of the Lord." And there it is. It can't get any simpler than that. The training and instruction of the Lord. Now, the modern version of Ephesians 6:1 could go something like this. "Parents, obey your children, for this will keep them happy and bring peace to your home." And we can laugh about that, but it's true, right? How many families have you seen where the kids run the home? They run the household. They dictate what the family does. But what we have to remember is simply this. Disobedience to parents is disobedience to who? It's rebellion against God. If we're disobedient to our parents, then we literally are rebelling against God. Now, the mirror verse is in Colossians chapter 3. And we're going to look at verses 18 through 21. And it addresses four specific groups of people here. Wives, husbands, children, and fathers. So it says, "Wives, submit yourselves to your husbands as it is fitting to the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not what? Do not be harsh with them. Children, obey your parents in what? Everything. And you do that because it what? It pleases the Lord. And then it says, fathers, do not embitter your children or they will become discouraged." See, Paul's primary goal in Colossians chapter 3 is to help you and I to understand what it means to live as people who are in Christ. That's his main goal here. And in verses 18 and 19, he describes the design that God put in place for the marriage relationship and how God intends for you and I as husbands and wives to live towards each other. That's how he lines that up. But then his attention turns to children and parents in verses 20 and 21. And that's where we're going to connect here on application points as we wrap this up right now. So in your application for notes, the very first thing that we need to do is, it says, "Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord." It's very important that you honor your mom and dad because why? Because the Bible says it's right and it pleases the Lord. Honor them even when you don't feel like it. There's not a person in this room that did not feel like honoring their parents, so you're not alone, okay? Do it even if you don't feel like it. Honor them even if you disagree with what they're trying to tell you, if you don't understand what they're doing, the position they're taking. Just do it because that's what God tells us to do. I can save you a whole lot of grief. If you decide that right now, it will save you a lot right now. If you decide, okay, I'm going to do this, it will save you a lot of grief. Instead of talking back to mom and dad, we need to learn how to say, "Yes, mom, yes, dad," or if they prefer, "Yes, ma'am," or "Yes, sir." I still have people that say that to me, and they're 10 years younger than me, but they say, "Yes, sir, yes, sir." Those are just respectful things that we should do. And we should do it, why? Because it pleases the Lord. And it's the right thing to do. Because the day is going to come when you will leave your parents' home. And you go, "Man, I can't wait." Slow it down, because when you get my age, you wish you could go back and be a little bit younger at times. Because my dad always said, the older you get, the what? Faster time flies, and it is true. So don't rush it. Be glad you're where you're at, where mom and dad can take care of all those needs for you. But there's going to come a time where you will leave the home and you will start your own family. And when you do that, that honoring your parents in the home is going to come to an end, but you're still going to have to honor them in the Lord as they age also, because many of us in here have already been to that spot where we've taken care of our aging parents, right? And that's just being honoring to the Lord and honoring to your parents. So we need to ask ourselves as children this question: do I honor and obey my parents, or am I disrespectful and disobedient? Because if you love God, I hope that you will say, I'm going to love and obey my parents. The next group is number two, and that's parents. It says, parents, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. You and I will teach our kids a lot of things to prepare them for adulthood. But the most fundamental thing that you and I can teach our kids is the respect for authority. That is lacking big time today. They are going to primarily learn respect from authority and honor by how they respect and honor you. That's how they're going to learn that. And as they honor you and obey you, they're going to learn how to honor God and obey those who God puts in authority over them. If a child does not first learn how to honor their parents, you know what's going to happen? They will not honor God or any authority head that they're going to be under as they age and get into the workforce or anything else. And parents, do not tolerate willful disrespect or defiance. Do not tolerate it. The scriptures are clear. In Proverbs 13:24, and I'm going to read from the New Living Translation, it says, those who spare the rod of discipline, what's the next word? What? They hate their children if you don't discipline them. Those who love their children, what's the next word? They care enough to discipline them. So you and I have to decide, do we hate our kids or do we care enough about them to discipline them? Because 90% of the time, a kid really wants to be disciplined, and they're going to push you to see if you care enough to discipline them. Does mom and dad love me? Because apparently they don't, because they're letting me get away with everything. There's not too many kids that won't tell you that's how it works. They want you to discipline them, because if they see you do that, they know you what? That you care, that you love them. Anybody ever have to spank your kids? Boy, I saw some hands in the back go up in a hurry. Spanking is good for your kids. There comes an age where you have to kind of stop that, right? But you can figure that out. But we need to spank our children sometimes also. But we have to be careful how we do that. Never spank your kids out of anger. Don't get to the point where you're beating the tar out of them to where you're going to do physical harm to them. You don't want to do that. And here's something else you should never do. Never fail to instruct them before and after the punishment. That's key. Let them know why they're being punished, and then talk to them after that. And then never fail to reassure your kids that you love them before and after a spanking. You did this, this is what's going to happen, and I'm doing this because I what? Because I care about you, I love you, and I want you to learn how to honor and respect and obey. And then the last group we talked to are Christians. That's the rest of us in here, hopefully. This is for you and I. Christians, encourage one another and build each other up. See, as you and I seek to promote well-being of our society, we need to encourage each other, even non-believers, to form strong families by appealing to God's blueprint in Scripture. God's design is that children be conceived by one man, one woman, devoted to each other in the bonds of marriage. That's God's design. God's design is that a man and woman would fulfill that relationship and that commitment to each other as husband and wife and fulfill the obligation to raise their children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. That's God's plan, not mine. This has to be our primary concern. If we want to change the direction our nation is going, we have to do something about it as believers this morning. If you and I care about the well-being of our society, then we're going to encourage healthy family relationships. And I hope that we will even do that among non-believers, because so many of us, if your kids are in any type of sports, you're involved with non-believers probably on a daily basis. So it's important that we share that with non-believers, because I can't think of a better way to be an example than through personal interaction with other people and non-believers as you and I go out into the world and live as salt and light. Amen? We need to go out there and live as salt and light. We may strive to encourage families to be strong. But we really want to get our families and our children to understand that it's important to honor God and to honor our parents. Making disciples starts where? Really starts in the home. Now, Jesus said, go and make disciples into all the world. That's where we got to go. But we better start in our homes and get those kids right and then go out and share that good news. So let's make a difference in our families, okay? I hope that we can take some of these things and make a big difference in our families. I want to encourage you to take some Grace U classes because we offer so many cool things down there that can help you with your family, can help you with your children, can help you with your marriage and your spiritual growth. So many great classes. I would say, hey, start some new traditions in your family. Anybody have family traditions? Start some family traditions and incorporate God in there. Learn to serve in the community and in the church together. And you go, well, Jeff, I don't know where to serve. Our deacons have a list about this big of places they can serve, right, Don? And you guys can get plugged in to serve anywhere you want in this community. Good for your children to be able to see that. And then for us that have raised our families, it's good for us as moms and dads to come alongside of the younger families right now and let them glean from our mistakes and the wisdom that God has taught us. It makes sense that we come alongside and help out these younger families. I love Aaron and Angie. They are the surrogate grandparents of Grace Community Church. At the end of the service, the kids flock to them. Aaron's picking them up. You know, they've been out to their house swimming. They babysit. That's what we should do. If we love each other, we should help each other in those areas. And then I say get creative. There's a lot of creative things you can do in your family. Mary and I, 14 years ago, we got creative by doing something that we call Cousins Camp. So what we did is we started a week vacation Bible school with our kids in the summertime, take them camping. We'd have a theme. We'd have T-shirts, memory verses, all kinds of stuff. And those grandkids loved that every year, 1 week out of the year. It was an awesome thing that we did. I've got two in college now. I got two in high school, and their schedules are crazy. So Cousins Camp sadly came to an end this year. But they all wanted to do what they called family camp. So we got together for a weekend, and the parents joined us, and we did family camp. We started a new tradition now. But here's the cool part about what we've done with our grandchildren. Over 14 years, they've learned 72 memory verses in 14 years. They come home and their parents are blown away that these kids know all this Bible stuff, you know? It's like, hey, all you got to do is teach them. And they're like sponges, man. They just soak it up. They really do. There's a lot of great places to get some connections like Focus on the Family and Family Life. So I would encourage you to really check some of these places out. When you're struggling, you can just type, you know, send an email, and they'll, a lot of times within 2 or 3 days, come back with some type of a answer for you. So I just really want to encourage you to do that. So I promise you that we'd look at that difference maker declaration at the end here. So this is what I'd like to do. I'd like you, if you can stand, I'd like you to stand up. And we're going to close in prayer. And so this is how we're going to do it. Have you ever been to a wedding before? If you've been to a wedding before, the pastor will say a line, and then what happens? The other person repeats after them. So for instance, I'm going to say, I was made for more than watching. You are going to say?
I was made for more than watching.
Wow, listen to that, PD. Okay, this is going to be our prayer to God. I was made for more than watching.
I was made for more than watching.
I have a history changing.
I have a history changing.
Difference making.
Difference making.
Life giving.
Life giving.
Spirit empowered legacy to leave behind.
Spirit